The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Now, we're delighted to be joined by Patrick Frayn, features writer with the Irish Times and author as well, to place his reads on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Before we get to your own picks, we do have to congratulate you on your recently released debut novel, Experts in a Dying Field. Patrick, just tell us quickly what it's about.
It's about a bunch of people my age who were formerly in a band and a music scene, experienced a tragedy, and then come back together around about now in their middle years and kind of explore mysteries from their past. And it's kind of told from the perspective of loads of different people. And it's also kind of about Dublin. They wander around the city a lot as they're figuring things out.
Okay, of course, you were in a band, weren't you? In your younger days.
I was indeed. I really thought that you'd be interviewing me now about my stadium tours, but none of that happened. And I loved it. And I still love music. And so a lot of this, I wanted to write a Dublin book. I wanted to write a book about Dublin for ages.
Write what you know.
And then I kind of went... go into, maybe the way into that is to write about a band because you don't have to research how to load a car with gear.
I would be a huge fan of your writing in the paper, Patrick. I really genuinely love your articles. Will this be for people who do read you every week in the Irish Times? Will they recognise this, that the wit and all of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, like it's a bit more melancholic. Like I think it's a funny-ish book about failure and death. If that makes sense.
I think the best type of humour.
I think there's a continuity with what I write in the paper, but it's quite different doing fiction, and it's quite like fiction has a different kind of role, and even writing it feels different. You know, like in the world of journalism, like the stuff we normally do, you're kind of pointing your finger at stuff and going, look at this thing, and let me explain that thing to you. And with fiction, it's more like you're going into your brain and you're dredging out memories and you're expanding kind of world.
You're very free in your writing, even as a journalist, though, because you do.
Yeah.
You are more creative, shall we say, in your writing as a journalist than a lot of journalists would be.
They give me a lot of leeway.
Hate that type of journalist. You can actually write.
The talented ones.
Yeah. He gets to write about whatever he wants, you know. It's just so unfair.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't expect this approach. I love the leeway they give me. I love reporting and I love going out. And I think where a lot of the fictional energy comes in this book is like years of experience talking to people and talking to strangers, which is, I think, really good for me, like better for me in a way than all the leeway they give me when I'm writing my funny stuff. Like there's something about having to go out into the city or go out into a town in England and talk to strangers on a street that it kind of teaches you something about yourself, but also just how interesting individuals are and how different from stereotypes.
And there's a discipline in that, of course, as well. Tell us what you're, back to the bookshelf, and what you're going to place on it. We will also put Experts in a Dying Field on the bookshelf. But what is your favourite book?
So in the last few years, I read The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie by Muriel Spark for the first time, like probably about a decade ago. And it was actually through the film. I was watching telly randomly and the film came up and I said, actually, I'm going to record this and I'm going to read the book because I kept meaning to. And then watch the film, which is also brilliant, like Maggie Smith. And then I went into a real Muriel Spark phase and read loads of her stuff. The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie is like, it's like the anti-Dead Poets Society. It's like she's charismatic and she's really inspirational, but there's also something toxic.
Toxic
and weird and manipulative in there. And Muriel Spark has got this real knack of really nailing personalities in a kind of cold-eyed way, like in a way that's slightly terrifying, that makes me think I would find her terrifying if I knew Muriel Spark, you know?
Yeah.
But it's incredible. It's only 120 pages
long. Is it that short?
It's really short.
So much happens in it.
It feels like, after you've read it, it feels like you've read Lord of the Rings. Like, it feels like you've read an epic. Because she somehow compresses, like, decades and decades of time and a big cast into this really small, neat little book. And all of her books are short. She's kind of, there's a specific genius in being able to compress things.
Yeah, I think there is.
That much.
I have not read this book, but I have seen the film, and I thought the film was brilliant. But Maggie Smith is probably brilliant in almost everything that she does.
It's one of those rare things where the film is kind of equally good to the book. Like, I kind of recommend people do both.
Yeah.
Because the film is...
Because often people say, it's nowhere near as good as the book.
Maggie Smith kind of, she brings that character alive really, really well.
I think she won an Oscar for that.
Yeah, I'm not a film buff.
I will find out. But I think she did.
It sounds right.
Yeah,
it sounds truthy.
We think she should have won an Oscar for it, at least.
Is it a kind of a? Oh, is there a moral of the book? Is there a like? Does it reach a kind of a suitable conclusion? I actually can't remember.
I think Muriel Spark is not somebody who believes in morals in a weird way. She kind of presents characters as like victims.
Now that I say it's quite amoral, though.
Yeah. She won for Best Actress in 1969 for The Crime of Miss Jean Brodie.
Yeah. Very good. Well remembered.
I think kind of in the book, she's like this, she's based on one of Muriel Spark's real teachers, and she is really compelling, and she's got this special group of girls that she singles out for special. She's their teacher, and she singles them out for kind of special focus, and she kind of manipulates them and manipulates them slowly in a very toxic way, and then some of them kind of manipulate her
and
back.
They become this set in school, don't they?
I think they're called the Brodie set or something. Yeah. And it, as the book goes on, it's kind of increasingly disturbing, and she does this amazing thing that I love, which is part of where that epic feel comes, where she'll just randomly jump 30 years into the future and she'll go when Sandy thought of this 30 years later, and you suddenly get this huge sense of space and time and characters changing over decades, so that when you are finished, you're going, I can't believe this was only 120 pages.
One of the things about it as well is even though it's set quite long ago, kind of the middle of the last century, or is it the earlier part of the last century?
Oh, is it that long ago? It was written in the early 60s. I don't know when is it set.
I'm really bad at these things.
Well, there's
things.
A bit of feminism in there thrown in, so probably it is probably mid-century. But
she's really into, like, this is one of the toxic things.
It's holding its own, you think, in terms of how it's dated?
Yeah, but that's partly, I think, because Muriel Spark is a little bit immoral. So she's not pinning her flag to any particular mast. Like, there are things that... And she also doesn't make any kind of declarative statements about good and evil in her stuff. So, like, Miss Jean Brodie's really into the romantic poets and painters, but also loves Benito Mussolini and stuff like that. So there's a kind of slight little dash of fascism in
thrown in.
Thrown in for good measure.
In fairness, that wouldn't be relevant to today's world at all.
Oh,
then.
Of course not.
So it has held its own.
Yeah.
I think you just checked in and it was the 30s. Interesting to have a sprinkling of fascism thrown about in the 60s when having been set in the 30s. Anyway, interesting and of itself. We shall move on to the last book you've read, which is another book that I have never managed to read.
This is like the opposite of The Crime of Miss Jean Brodie, like where that's really, really concise. This is a book where the person put absolute kitchen sink in there. So James Joyce's Ulysses, which I'm kind of putting in there because I'm boasting that I just finished reading
it. Well, fair enough. Because I was going to ask you, like, did you actually read the whole thing or did you just do what I've done, read the first chapter 25 different times?
So I read the whole thing. Now, I read it first years ago for college and I don't think I quite got it. And then I was doing an event for Bloomsday and I said, okay, I'll read it now properly and read it kind of as a grown-up and try and figure out what's going on. And I kind of loved it and I didn't find it as hard as people had led me to believe as I remembered from reading it in college. And I came to the conclusion that it's, I think people make you scared of it. I think people keep talking about it as an important book and they downplay things about it that are actually very funny and fun. Like it's a very funny book. Most of the experimentation is humor. So he'll have a section in a newspaper office where there are those like newspaper subheadings every few paragraphs where the subheadings are kind of taking the mick out of the people in the newspaper office.
Yeah.
There's kind of a mock heroic section where people are just doing kind of scuzzy everyday things, but it's written as though they're, you know, Ulysses or Cú Chulainn or something. He's constantly, you know, making jokes at the expense of people like W.B. Yeats and Singh. And the humor in it, like people do mention the humor, but they mention it as though, oh, it's also funny.
Yeah.
And I don't think I realized until this reread, or I don't think it's impressed on people enough how it's actually a book about humor. Okay. And it's a book about jokes. Oh. And
is it inaccessible? Because that's always been, I have also read part of the first chapter. And then I just, and maybe I've been put off by hearing that everyone else does that too. I don't know. We did a long time ago on the bookshelf. Somebody else recommended Ulysses and raved about it as, you know, capturing a sense of Dublin in a way, and did ignite a kind of an interest in me in reading it that I haven't managed to follow through on. But my fear has always been that it would be very inaccessible.
I don't think it actually is. And I think a friend of mine recommends it actually, and I think it's perfectly fine, that there's bits that are easier to read than others. And she was going, when you get to a hard bit, just go to Wikipedia and it'll explain and then it'll make it easier.
That is good advice.
But I think actually, and as journalists, I think you'll recognise this is a reason to read it. It is so completist about Dublin of 1904. Like, there's just so much detail. Like, he is throwing in like stuff about things that were obviously big in the city at the time. He's throwing in references to, you know, the national question and like what's happening in Republican circles. Yeah. He's throwing in stuff about culture, about newspapers, about absolute jokes, about a lot of sex. There's loads of sex in Ulysses.
But he was a notorious perv, wasn't it? I'm only messing.
Sex positive times, we don't use the word perv. aficionado.
I'm joking, but the letters that many people will have seen, the letters between you know, between himself and his wife Nora Barnacle, and they're racy.
They are racy, and that there are some very racy bits in the book. It's also a very kind book. Like, Bloom as a character is a really kind-hearted person, and a lot of what he's doing in the book is he's giving you this picture of an alternative Dublin that's based on people just getting along, getting on with things, being nice to one another, like as Bloom is trying to be nice to the people around him in a way that, like, the very nationalistic notion of like Celtic heroes, you know, he's all putting out at odds with that. It also reminds me of social media. I was just going to say, reading it now, like bits of Bloom's kind of soliloquy or Bloom's kind of stream of consciousness reminds me of like flicking through Instagram, because it is jumping.
I've never heard that comparison before, but I like it. Just before you go, you're keeping it in-house for your honourable mention.
So my honourable mention is my wife Anna Carey's excellent, romantic, sexy and funny book, Love Scene, which is set behind the scenes of a Dublin soap opera. But not Fair City. It's a fictional soap opera. And it's about two people working together who don't particularly like each other, but actually there's a lot of sexy sparks between them. And
I ask you, as Anna's husband, when she writes sexy, romantic, love, you know, relationship-based stuff, do you read it and go, is that what she really thinks? And stuff like that.
I think it's a good advertisement for me.
Like, because so
if people get mixed,
or people looking at it with a whole new respect.
People are reading it and reading the sexy male characters as some sort of version of me, I'm perfectly fine with that. And I'm not going to say anything that takes it away from me.
Take it all.
All right, Patrick, we do have to leave it there. Absolutely. Yeah. Brilliant. Three brilliant choices. Honourable mention for Love Scene.
By
Anna Carey, my former colleague in the Sunday Tribune many, many years ago. Thank you so much for coming into us.
Thanks a million.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.